You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast for the Worldview segment, I talk about a medical kidnapping case in Arkansas. And for the main topic, Monica and I continue to discuss education. This will be part two for the education series. On today's Worldview segment, I want to talk to you about a medical kidnapping case. The medical kidnapping has been on the rise here recently over the last several years. We're hearing about more and more cases. The one in particular that I'm talking about today is in Arkansas. This is the one where seven homeschooled children were removed from a home because the father had an unapproved mineral supplement. Not a dangerous mineral supplement or an illegal mineral supplement, but an unapproved mineral supplement. In other words, the FDA has not approved it, and therefore, since it's unapproved, it's apparently bad. Now, it's filled with supplements or minerals that are perfectly legal, that are perfectly safe. And in fact, this particular combination is used by the Red Cross in Africa to treat many different ailments with success. There's trials happening all over the place. But what we have here is an unapproved. In other words, the state has not approved this mineral supplement, and therefore this family is being punished for it. And they had their kids removed in the middle of the night by the Department of Homeland Security and armed sheriffs. Okay, this is a family who's never been in trouble with the law. Their kids are healthy. There's no medical problems with the children or in the family at all. This is the Stanley family, and their kids were removed from them. The kids are now, instead of being homeschooled by their parents, they have been placed in public schools, and they're in the custody of the state. So all of this has been happening recently. It's in Garland County in Arkansas. And you can find out more about it if you just look up the Stanley case, medicalkidnapping.com. There's many different ways that you can look this up, or the seven homeschooled children removed. But here's the tragedy of this. Now, the supplement is called MMS, for Miracle Mineral Supplement. Okay, it's a mineral supplement. And it's been used, it has allegedly been used as a remedy for cancer and AIDS, etc. Now, those are bold claims, of course, and maybe that's an overstatement. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this supplement is being used in several places in the European Union, in Africa. Even pharmaceutical companies are running trials on it. But the state has not approved it, and therefore they can't use it. Now, they weren't trying to sell it. They were just using it, and they legally bought it from the distributor. Now, let me be fair. The distributor is under attack as well by the government. The FDA in particular has brought charges, and he's facing prison, actually. They haven't proved that what he has done has been harmful or anything. They're just saying it's not approved. Okay, so he hasn't gone through all of the FDA requirements, etc. And in fact, that guy, the main distributor for it, Daniel Smith, he is embroiled in a legal battle with the FDA and has been for several years. He's currently under house arrest, wearing a government monitoring device for daring to distribute a mineral supplement, which many people are using with success. Now, there is a defense, an MMS defense fund and site that's set up, and the ingredient is sodium chlorite. But like I said, it has gained what they call orphaned drug status in the EU for the treatment, which means it's legal for the treatment of Lou Gehrig's disease and for many other ailments like that. So it's being used for Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, and Parkinson's disease as well. But again, they did not get the proper approval from the FDA. By the way, mineral supplement has killed no one. No one has died from many years of this product being used all around the world. None. Zero. Okay, but how about let's take a look at the FDA-approved pharmaceutical products. Did you know that over 100,000 people die from FDA-approved pharmaceutical products every year? These products are prescribed and taken as directed, and still over 100,000 people a year are dying from these products. But this mineral supplement, which has killed no one, has caused the government to take away seven children from their family, of a family who is not in any, has never been in any legal trouble at all. The real deal here is government control. It's the fact that this family doesn't do things how the government expects them to do things. They're not in the mainstream. They're not on the conveyor belt. They need to get back on the conveyor belt. So we're going to keep track of this story, and we'll be in prayer over for this family, that the children will be reunited with their family very soon. Okay, today we continue our conversation about education. And I want to start off with a quote from A.A. Hodge. And this was written in 1887. And it says, quote, "I am as sure as I am of Christ's reign that a comprehensive and centralized system of national education, separated from religion, as is now commonly proposed, will prove the most appalling engineering for the propagation of anti-Christian and atheistic unbelief, and of antisocial, nihilistic ethics, individual, social, and political, which is the sin rent world has ever seen." That was written in 1887.
That's a long time ago. But see, it was commonly being proposed at that time, right. And today it's commonly embraced.
Yes, we have that. We do that have, is what we have a centralized system of essentially national education. And I say that not because, you know, each state is responsible for its own education, but it is largely bowed to the federal government based on the lure of grants and purse strings and money, essentially.
Yeah,
money.
Even the federal lunch programs and things like that. Yeah. And everybody runs under the same standard. So, like the No Child Left Behind.
Right.
Then that moved.
Proposed and implemented by Republicans.
Yeah, Republicans. But this is not a Republican-Democrat argument or issue. This
right.
is American liberty issue, yeah. And that can come from both sides.
Right, because, you know, a lot of people, conservatives, will say, we want school choice.
Mm.
Well, but there's a problem with that. The problem is that it's still very government-heavy. So you have kind of a shifting of money around. They want to be able to take money from the federal government and apply it somewhere else. This is not the answer.
No, and especially this is something that I've had debates with other homeschoolers, because some homeschoolers are like, you know, hey, I should get that money, my tax money that's going to that school, so I can apply it to my own homeschool. Well, what happens there is that now you're opening up your homeschool to government oversight. When you're accepting money, even when you're taking tax breaks, you're saying it's okay for you to look over my homeschool to see how I'm doing. And now you have to fall under federal or state guidelines and test into the same thing and basically lose more liberty than you had before.
Right. The answer is actually total privatization of all of education.
Right.
And a lot of people would say people can't afford that, et cetera. The cost of education would dramatically decrease if there was a total privatization of it.
It would. And, you know, the beauty of this type of system, would be, it would go back to where it was before public education was run by the state or by the federal government, in that it would be ministries, it would be local outreaches that would be helping the people to get educated. We had a pretty well-educated citizenry back before public education was implemented.
Better than now.
Yeah.
You know, almost by any measure.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've kind of hit on that. We want to talk about, it kind of leads us into curriculum and how the government then controls everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through the curriculum.
Yeah.
And they know that. Again, it's gradual change. We have all of the central planners that have been involved in public education because they knew this was the key. You want to transform society? Get the kids.
Right.
And get them early. Get the curriculum. Right. And get, you know, hence universal, you know, preschool that's proposed.
Now it's the P20. The
P20.
Prenatal. Prenatal, people. This isn't just preschool. This is prenatal. So before that child is born, the government wants to begin to already have influence over that unborn child till 20 years old. And from some of the tracking systems, this is, we're talking all the way into career.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, we have to talk about Common Core because that is... It's what's front and center right now. It's obviously the attempted takeover. I mean, bottom line, the takeover of education.
Yeah.
We're going to impose all of these standards across the board, and this will really get everybody on the same page.
Right. Yeah, and the thing with Common Core, and one thing I'm glad about is that, I was just saying the other day, is it's put a fire under a lot of people who were sleeping.
Yeah.
Who really didn't realize that there were any problems with the educational system. I don't know how they didn't know that, but it kind of woke people up and they went, whoa, wait a minute. Why are we taking the control of the schools out of the local government's hands and putting it into a federal government who is so far from our community, they do not know what our children need and what's going on here and
right.
what decisions that we want made in our local government here for our schools. So that's been good with Common Core because this isn't a new thing.
Right. Well, now, what would you say to someone who says, well, my state rejected Common Core, so all is good with my state?
Right. And that's when we go back to exactly what we talked about yesterday, the history of public education.
Right.
What were the aims and the goals of it? And even apart from Common Core, they're still achieving...
The same ideology.
Same at a little bit slower rate
right.
because they haven't introduced all the same... complete dumbing down of the children or the tracking systems that have been
right.
involved with Common Core.
So what do you think was the incorrect assumption by the central planners when implementing Common Core?
I think they really truly thought that they had come far enough that the people would be docile and willing to allow the federal government a total takeover. And they were shocked that there were some states that absolutely rejected it. And that the citizens have come up and said, no way, this can't be happening. And people are fighting against it, even the states that have implemented it, which most states implemented Common Core back in 2010. This isn't a 2014 or a 2013 thing. This has been done for many years, and people are just becoming aware of it.
Right. And so, you know, if we go back to Dewey, who said that the school was essentially a social institution, not a... an academic institution, say the three R's. I am assuming then that Common Core has got a lot of social agenda in it.
Yes. Well, yeah, we see evidence of that, like throughout Facebook, people will take pictures of some of the curriculum or some of the social
right.
studies books that are being passed around. And there are a lot of them are pro-Muslim. They're not... they're not discussing our history of what it truly is. They're saying stuff about, you know, racist white men or the founders of our country. You know,
they were
racist
terrorists.
Yeah. Rich white men that didn't care about people.
Yeah.
And so why should we embrace the ideology of our founders? And so they're trying to reconstruct history.
I see. You know, we kind of jumped ahead to Common Core, and I want to come back to that. But let's take a step back and look at reading as far as in the curriculum. And the whole idea of something, a simple concept like learning how to read, not that it's easy, but when you take our language, which is based on an alphabet, a phonetic alphabet, and when the teaching establishment then applies a teaching methodology based on an ideographic language like Chinese.
Yeah, like the picture, like picture graphs, you know, like you look at a symbol and that represents a word.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Right. And that, our language doesn't.
It's like kanji, Japanese, Chinese.
Right. Our language doesn't work that way.
No.
It is phonetic.
It's phonetic. So just real quick here, if you go all the way back, think of the cave drawings. And they were literally pictures in order to convey a message.
Mm-hmm.
And then it advanced into hieroglyphics, like the Egyptians. It was more symbolic. That was more ideographic.
Right.
So this picture represents a thing or even a concept.
Or a word or an idea.
Or a word.
Yep.
And then from there, I think it was, I don't know exactly who did it, but the Greeks and the Romans ended up with a phonetic language.
Mm-hmm.
So based on symbols still, but those symbols represent sounds.
Right.
And then that's how we get a phonetic alphabet, etc. Now, the Chinese and even the Japanese, when you look at their kanji, have kept that, but they've also gone to hiragana and katakana, which is phonetic.
Right.
Right. So pretty much everybody has gone to a phonetic type language for the most part because it's so much simpler. But then to teach that language, they do it through a series of systematic phonics. Right.
Right.
And so what happened in early or, you know, in the 19th century or the 20th century, I'm sorry, with our teaching methodology?
Yeah, I want to say that the concept of whole language or whether the word for it, I'm going to call it whole language.
Okay.
Came up in the 1930s, and there was actually a review.
CSA
method, yeah, something like that. There was actually a review in 1939 by an educational psychologist stating how many problems there would be using this new way.
Well, what is the whole language, or what is the CSA or LUXAY?
It's based more on learning whole words. So rather than teaching them phonics and how to sound out the word, they have to look at the word, say table, and they have to see the pattern and how it works because they don't know the different sounds and how they blend together.
Okay.
They just have to look at it and somehow memorize it. So they have to see this letter combination and remember it and then know what it stands for.
Okay, so they're seeing the word table almost as an ideograph, like that
like
a
picture.
A picture.
Yep.
Okay, and is that how it's still taught today?
Yes.
In most places?
Yes. As a matter of fact, just, you know, a few years ago, my sister's son was having a really hard time learning to read, and I couldn't figure out, you know, what exactly how they're teaching them, and she said, well, these are his flashcards, and it wasn't phonics, it wasn't letters, it was whole words that he was literally having to look at and just say what it was.
Gotcha.
And it was like, kids don't learn that way. Most people can't learn that way. And you're also limiting their vocabulary.
Right. Well, and like we said, it's taking a phonetic language and applying a methodology that's meant for ideographic language.
Yes.
It's backwards.
It is backwards.
It doesn't make sense. And, you know, so like we've heard them say, if a child is looking at, under this methodology, the word father, and the child says daddy, they say, oh, that's okay.
Right, because it's the right concept.
It's the right concept.
Even though they haven't read the word correctly at all.
And they've shown that the vocabulary of people under this methodology is so much less than somebody who starts out by reading phonics, can read even before they understand all of
the
vocabulary, but they pick up the vocabulary so much faster from being able to read it.
Right, because now they can sound out anything. So there's not any word anywhere that they cannot figure
right.
out if it's in English.
It's like, okay, you learned hiragana and katakana.
Mm-hmm.
You could read Japanese
right.
before you knew what everything meant.
Right, exactly. I could read it because I could sound it out, and now it was just a matter of putting that with the definition.
When you learn vocabulary, it's easier to attach.
Yes, exactly.
So that makes sense. So why the change? Why are we still doing this thing?
Well, if you go back to the purpose, the objectives and the aims behind public education in America, it makes sense that you would want to dumb people down, deliberately dumb them down. You want to keep it so that they're not able to read the founding documents by themselves, because I'm telling you what, that requires some pretty high vocabulary to understand what you're reading.
Even though the founding documents were purposely written in the common vernacular of the time, so the average person could read it. Of the time, yet we don't.
Oh yeah, today it would be extremely complicated, and particularly for somebody who's only learned flashcard reading.
Yeah,
they don't know how to phonetically sound things out, and they can't look up words because they're overwhelmed by what's in front of them.
Now it's a strong claim to say that this is deliberate. We could say, oh well, you know, this is the new methodology, and we think it's going to work better. But to say, hey, this is deliberately dumbing down. We know that it is dumbing them down.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone willing to look at just a cursory look at an evidence-based study could see that kids today are not as well educated, including us when we came out of high school. We're not nearly as well educated as somebody 100 years ago in the average school.
Well, the thing is, we're not stupider.
No, it has nothing to do with intelligence.
It's not like, oh, the kids aren't as smart as they were. No, and the reason they have so many more learning disabilities is because of the frustration that's been brought on by the teaching methods that have been brought into our American education system.
Before they brought on this whole language learning, there was no such thing as dyslexia.
Dyslexia, yes. Yeah. And I was going to say that back in 1939, this American psychologist, educational psychologist, said this is going to cause learning disabilities. Yeah. This is going to confuse the mind to the point that kids are not able to learn. And that's what we saw after this fully implemented in around the 1950s with the C. Dick and Jane books. We began to see an increase on a pretty large scale of learning disabilities, dyslexia, and things like that.
So when you learn in a systematic way, like intensive phonics, you're learning a specific, you're reading from left to right, you're sounding things out, because that makes sense. If you have to sound everything out, you have to go from left to right.
Right.
What are the symptoms of dyslexia?
Well, yeah, the letters are out of order.
Uh-huh.
They're not able to
spell.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything is mixed up in their mind. And, you know, when you give them a whole word and you're asking them just inspect this and what's his name?
Blumenfeld
used a really good example. When you look at a picture or a painting or anything like that, you don't look from left to right.
Right.
You examine it. Whatever catches your eye, you look at that first, and then you kind of evaluate the whole picture.
Right.
That's kind of what we're expecting kids to do, and yet we're saying, oh, you have to read left to right, but we're saying, here's a word, and this is what it says. Well, maybe the TH is catching their eye because it stands up taller than the rest of the word. So you got father, so maybe they look at the F, then they see the TH, and then they see the A, then they see the ER. Well, now they've just blended that whole word in their mind.
Right.
Because it didn't make sense to them.
Yep. Now, what would you say to the, because we've had lots of conversations with teachers, you specifically, and they'll say, oh, we do phonics. We do use phonics.
Well,
what do they mean?
What they mean is that they are, it's not like they're not introducing any sounds at school. They are. There are some sounds they're doing. What they're not doing is intensive phonics reading.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So
it's not phonics.
It's not true phonics.
No.
They're teaching like, oh, the CH says ch, but that's for kids to be able to decipher these sight words a little bit more effectively.
Right.
So they can kind of at least cut down on the choices that they have to make.
Hence still all of the confusion.
Yes.
All of the brand new disorder of dyslexia.
Yeah.
Because we're trapping them.
Yeah, we are. We're binding their brains. We're confusing them.
This is deliberate.
Yes, and I will say this is not deliberate from teachers.
No.
Because unfortunately, even our generation now, we've been so indoctrinated and so, I want to use the word brainwashed because it is kind of like that.
Well,
we've been in it so much that we don't even recognize a lot of the problems. And we think they're the experts. They would know best. You know, who am I to say, well, this isn't the right way to do it? And teachers have not only gone through the 12 years of indoctrination at public school, but now they've gone to college, where they've said these are the right teaching methods, and honestly, most of them are based on conditioning, behavioral and educational conditioning, treating the children like they're animals.
Right.
So you go back to the Prussian system.
Yeah.
You go back to Darwinism. You can look at Skinner, all these different doctors, Pavlov.
Yep.
Skinner. So you have Skinnerian method. You have operant conditioning. You have Pavlov's dog, which all of this stuff is based on. It's, what do they call that? Stimuli response.
Yeah, a stimuli response. So, and not only that, the amount, so that we've been taught that you have to, the more you expose a child to something, the more they'll learn it. So it's this is what this is, and this is the proper response. This is what it is in proper response. And after a while, it becomes automatic.
Right. So, and again, it goes back down to the fundamental worldview issues.
Yes.
They really are looking at kids as just, okay, well, these are just advanced animals.
Right.
And so we need to kind of train them like an animal.
Right.
It's humanism.
Yeah, it is. And, I took one semester of teacher education courses at a Christian university. And this is when I began my research on education.
Right. Because you couldn't stomach another semester.
I couldn't believe what I was being bombarded by in a Christian university. Of course, we were using secular textbooks, but
because they had to get certification.
To have certification. But as I'm going through it, I thought, wow, the majority of this is social. Like, it is social agenda, and it's stuff that is completely wrong. And yet that was what the majority of our thing was about, as well as behavior in the classroom. So much on behavior and social agenda.
Right.
And I thought, what is going on? Like, this is what teachers are being taught. This is the view of the children that they're taking. And then I started doing research and started finding Eisenbeit and realizing that there was something seriously wrong with our American public education system.
Yeah. And this is not just like I said, I mentioned this earlier, I think in the last podcast, this is not just from a Christian perspective, although it certainly is.
Right.
Or it should be, a worldview issue, because as Christians, there's no area of our lives that should not be impacted by our faith.
Right.
And certainly education needs to be one of them.
Right. God, Lord is Lord of all.
But at the same time, I know lots of secular people that are like, this is wrong. There's something wrong. I don't know exactly what it is, but there's something wrong. I like to listen to Jack Spirko now and again on the Survival Podcast. He talks stronger against public school than any Christian I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And he's not a Christian.
Right.
He doesn't claim to be.
I know. Well, it's because they're seeing that this isn't just about worldview, because even if they agreed with evolution and social agenda that they're trying to push with homosexuality and all of that, they're realizing that they are dumbing down our children. And there's a certain loss of control that not only comes over the parents, but also over now local districts and state districts is becoming federalized.
Yeah, right. And that is a great point, because it's the slow march, march of socialism. When we have this idea of dyslexia, I want to go back to the reading for just a minute, because it's so important. It's foundational.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If you don't know how to read, you can never learn anything.
Right. And so we've created learning disability.
Yes.
Through teaching a terrible methodology, using a methodology that is not intended for a phonics-based language.
Right.
Yet we're still doing it. Now, if you talk to teachers, they say, oh, no, we use phonics, even though they're not, because it's not the systematized, intensive phonics teaching them to read. Your child should actually know how to read before they know a lot of the words.
Yes.
And then those words will come quicker. And they've seen that. But it's also led to other, quote-unquote, learning disabilities.
Yes, other disorders. Classroom issues or whatever, ADD, ADHD, because, you deal with a kid who's sitting in a classroom up to this point, has enjoyed learning, has had a real interest in learning more about their world, and they suddenly have to sit in a classroom for, I don't know, 6-7 hours a day, sitting still, and then they've got to be taught things that are so frustrating because they can't get it, that after a while they start acting up in class, they start talking to everybody around them, they start having behavioral issues, they start maybe being oppositional to the teacher or to even to their parents because this frustration is just coming out. Well, what's the solution? Medicate.
You're right.
Medicate, because you need them to act a certain way in class, And it's like, okay, let's make you docile, make you cooperative, and do anything to get you that way.
Right, which, of course, you know, Ritalin, a lot of people don't know this, but Ritalin came and went from the pharmaceutical companies. And I think it was for, like schizophrenia and things like that.
Yeah,
some more advanced
or, I can't remember.
Issues going on with adults and things.
Yeah.
And it was repackaged for kids
yeah.
with behavioral problems.
Right.
And you know, and went on to make billions of more dollars based on repurposing
right.
the drug.
Yeah.
Ritalin wasn't brought about for ADHD.
Right.
It had a previous problem that it addressed.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, they repurposed it for ADHD and, I don't know, ADD.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's all these new medications, and you're not going to have anyone withdrawing their children from that anymore because they've gotten used to the kids being on it, even with all the negative side effects that come along with these medications. And teachers don't really care as long as they're cooperative in class. And half the time, they're I don't want to say zombies, but they're not as interactive or present as they would be if they weren't on these medications.
Yeah, it's a sad state.
It really is.
How about, you know, then this came up. I think we kind of fell upon this, or maybe you didn't, but I did. Long after it had already been implemented, I found out, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago about this new thing called an IEP.
Yes.
And I was like, what is this? I don't even understand this. What is an IEP?
Individualized Educational Plan. Most of the time, they have it in classrooms because there's a child who either has a learning disability that's been diagnosed by the experts.
Say dyslexia, say ADHD.
Something, yeah.
Okay.
Or a behavioral issue that is making it more difficult for them to learn. And so what the solution is not, let's figure out how this child can learn and let's you know, teach them in that method. No, the solution is we're going to keep teaching in the same method we are, which is only working for about 2/3 of the kids here,
right.
But that's okay. And what we're going to do is just allow them to do it on a lower level. So they're not going to be as advanced educationally, and we will continue keeping them up with their peer group because socializing is very important.
It's primarily a social institution.
Right.
Via Dewey.
Yes.
We're executing his plan perfectly.
So they get through 12th grade, but they don't really have a 12th grade education. They've got maybe a 9th grade education because they were put on a specialized plan.
But they have a high school diploma.
They have a high school diploma. And, you know, the thing is, and this is my major issue with an IEP, is that it gives the teachers an out. And it's giving the parents an out, too, because the parents then aren't going, hey, no, this isn't okay. I want my child to have the same level of education that the other kids have, but you need to figure out how to best do this, or better yet, take them out of school.
Right.
But the teachers then can say, oh, well, they've got a special issue. You know, they've got this going on or that going on. They're on medication. So let's put them on IEP, and they're going to do a different spelling list than the rest of the kids. They're going to do a different reading level than the rest of the kids.
Well, how can you have a bunch of kids in class, a third, and we're starting to see those numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In fact, that's what this professor in the 1930s said. You're going to have, I don't know if he used numbers, but he said that you're going to have significant problems.
Yeah.
And since then, people have come up and said, hey, a third of kids are having problems with this type of methodology. The other 2/3 somehow kind of figure it out,
mm-hmm.
even though they still aren't getting to a higher reading level than kids were 7,500 years ago.
Right.
But how does a teacher deal with a third of the class that's on a different
IEP.
Plan?
Well, that's when you have...
Or are they different? Or are they like baskets of plans, like this level?
I don't know exactly how each individual classroom works, but I do know that the increase of volunteers has been significant over the years, like parents volunteering
okay.
in the classroom,
okay.
and not just to come in and bring cupcakes and have a little party, but to literally be an assistant.
I see.
Also, teacher's
assistants. Because you're having 3 or 4 different, or maybe half dozen different
IEPs,
levels to teach to.
Yes. And then not only that, you also have specialists coming in. So you have speech pathologists, or you have reading specialists, or you have a math specialist that will help that particular child with their IEP. So they are taken out of the classroom, or they're put into a separate area and just taught their level in, you know, however they're supposed to. outside of their regular classroom. And it's not catching kids up. It's not like the specialist is getting them to the point that they're caught up with their peers and then they're still able to catch up and graduate with the same level. I'm not seeing that.
Okay, is an IEP related to Common Core? Are these two different ideas? I mean, they work together, obviously, but are they...
IEPs have been around before Common Core.
Okay. Okay.
And but it does fit in really well with Common Core because one of Common Core's... Yes, the tracking. One of Common Core's main objectives is by the time the kids are in first or second grade, that they will be labeled for a particular track. Is this kid smart enough to go on to a university track? Is this one that's going to go to community college? Or is this one that will be slotted for more of a trade school?
Right.
And this is happening.
Kind of sounds like the Prussian system.
Yeah.
Efficient. You know, we have lanes. We're going to put you over here and you over here. And it's very
right.
organized.
And, you know, the problem with that is that, like, okay, where do the artists go? Like, I mean, you've slotted this kid for a particular job track. I mean, to the point that they say, like, this child is strongest for engineering and, you know...
The sciences.
Science, yeah, whatever. So they're tracking them in there. And, well, what if this child has a real love for music or art or poetry? What if they want to be a teacher, even if their strengths are something else? What if they want to be a doctor, but they aren't testing in super
high?
They'll
be given their assigned task by the council.
Right.
Like the giver.
I know. And that's really the fear, is that we're talking about labeling children according to what we think at a very young age, where many kids don't blossom until they're 10 or 11 years old.
Well, right. And if you look at, again... People respond differently to different teaching methodologies. May not
correct.
A child who has a problem with whole language learning because it's, you know, messing up his mind doesn't mean he's not intelligent.
Right.
That child could be very intelligent. It's just that methodology kind of screwed him up.
Right. And now he feels like he's stupid.
Right.
Well, now he feels dumb right. and like, you know what, maybe I wanted to be a doctor, but now I'm going to be a member of a local band and I'm going to work at... you know, at a gas station.
Right.
Because he doesn't have any hope. It's not like, I'm not putting down those jobs, but I'm saying that if someone wants to do something different, we should give them the tools
right.
and equip them for success in their life, in their chosen field. We shouldn't be assigning them what we want them to do or what fits best into society.
Yeah, I agree. So with this idea of curriculum, I mean, there's obviously we could go on for hours and hours, but I think this gives enough of a picture of how curriculum is used
to shape a culture. Our scripture for today comes from Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it.
That's the podcast for today. Don't forget to visit us at thecourageouslifepodcast.com. Please leave us some comments and questions. Also, like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Thanks for listening. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.